Hey everyone, what's up? I'm Sarah.
I'm Liz.
And this is the It's Fine, I'm Fine podcast.
So we wanted to start today's podcast by talking about how grateful we are for the feedback that we've gotten. It's obviously challenging to be vulnerable, but we feel like a lot of the people who have responded to us really needed a podcast like this. And we're so excited to be able to talk about these things and try to help everyone through anything that we're all going through.
I absolutely agree. And to add on to that, today we have our very special friend, someone I've known for many years, Laura. Laura, say what's
Hello.
Up.
Hello.
Hi.
Welcome.
Welcome, welcome.
So nice to be here.
So happy to have you. The whole point of this podcast is to help people feel a little bit less alone and to kind of talk out tools for anxiety, because we know that many of us go through these same things. And so our first guest, Laura, is going to help us talk through some of the anxieties that we feel and offer different perspectives and help us figure out, you know, other ways that maybe Liz and I would have never thought of to get through these anxieties that we feel.
Which I think is why you and I, our friendship has come to the place that it is, because for viewers, like, we've been doing this for the last, 6 years?
Mm-hmm. You guys have kind of already been talking right. through anxieties, like, as friends.
Constantly. Yeah, talking through everything. So honestly, like, we always speak to the fact that as much as there are so many important relationships in your life, it's really hard to find someone that you can actually say literally anything to.
Yeah, it's very rare.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
So that's why we're here.
Yeah. And when Laura and I first became friends, just for some context, we were in the same sorority at Syracuse, and
I think just gravitated towards each other. Like, there was something strange. We hung out one time at a bar. Oh, it was summer going into school.
Our sophomore year.
And Sass wanted to tell some story about
my old breakup. Yeah.
Yeah. And Classic. No one was listening. Classic. And Sass and I weren't even friends. Sarah and I weren't even friends. Do they know that we call you Sass?
No one knows.
But so this is big. So Sarah Sassone is called Sass by everyone who loves her and knows her well. Aside from, like, her parents.
So if you call me Sarah and you don't call me Sass, like, you must not love me.
But yes, we met at a bar, and I was, like, so hyper aware of your story and just listening to you talk. That was the start of exactly what our friendship is to this day.
Well, we actually met for the first time in sorority, like, pledging.
But didn't hit it off until that moment of, okay, I'm going to listen to you ramble for the next 30 minutes.
And I was like,
why
is no one listening? And you were like, I am. And I was like, oh, that's different.
Which is literally what happens in our bedroom yesterday. So it hasn't changed.
Yeah, it's been really nice. And I think that something that's really important to me is that when I first started discovering what anxiety was, and I've talked about that a little bit on past podcast episodes, aka 1 and 2, I was still trying to figure out what it was. And Laura was one of the first friends to really ask me all the questions that I was kind of scared to ask myself. Like, well, what does it feel when it's hard to breathe? Or, like, you know, sometimes we would sleep in the same bed during senior
Many
year of college.
Times.
And she would wake me up in the middle of the night and be like, Sass, like, are you okay? Like, you're not really breathing properly. And I was like, oh, I didn't even know. And, you know, we would talk about how that is really part of my anxiety. And through that, our friendship has grown, obviously, so much. We live together. But yeah,
I think interesting, because that was, like, the physical manifestation, like, hearing you talk about the fact that your chest was so tight. When I started to notice that I was experiencing anxiety, which we'll talk about as we
it
go
set
on,
off, like, alarm bells.
I was like, oh, wait, this isn't nausea. Like, this isn't just, you know, I'm full right now.
My
chest is tight. Why have I been biting my nails for the last 10 years?
That's important.
Like, it's not fun. You know, it wasn't tasty.
Right.
So there was a reason behind it.
Gourmet nails.
Like, my parents used to put that, like,
the don't bite.
The don't bite. Disgusting. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to bite it even more.
Yeah.
So
it's so true.
That's a huge part of our relationship too, is, like, that really made me take an actual good hard look at those things that I was experiencing and be like, okay, now that this has been normalized in this friendship that I have, I can take a look at this without fear and be like, okay, same, you know, versus I'm the first person that I know to,
I think that that's so important, because when we learn how to help our friends deal with anxiety, we can also experience a lot of like residual benefits from that. Like we might not be experiencing anxiety when we're helping that friend, but who knows, maybe someday those tools that we use to help mm-hmm. them will help that friend mm-hmm. help us, or we'll be able to recognize right. in ourselves like, oh, I saw these things in other people. Are they happening to me?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Like yeah. not too long ago, my friend was feeling a lot of stress in her life, and we were going out one night and she was like, my stomach really hurts. Like I'm feeling really nauseous. Mm-hmm. And I know for me, when my stomach hurts 90% of the time, it's anxiety.
Right.
So in the moment I took out my like yogi self and I was like, before we go out, let's take like 5 deep breaths together. And I know that might sound like funny or whatever, but she instantly felt better.
Yeah.
She was like, oh my God, like I haven't done that in so long. And she was like, that really helped me. Like, thank you for that.
You know,
and I was like, I've been there.
Yeah. You know what that makes me think of? Like sometimes I talk to my mom about, let's say our relationship, and my mom's like, hey, how's Sarah doing? Mm-hmm. And I'll be like, oh, we had this amazing conversation the other day where she revealed this to me and I said this. And my mom's like, dumbfounded, and is like, I never spoke to my friends about stuff like this. And I think that's a very 2019 relationship mm-hmm, because
definitely.
I don't know a lot of people in other generations that speak. My mom has lifelong friends that she's known since pre-K. They don't talk about
their
anxiety.
Feelings, right?
Like those types of closeness is very, very new, I think,
mm-hmm.
to be considered normal and like acceptable.
Agreed. Totally. I think we are the first generation to be able to talk openly about mental health, but because we come from a generation
yeah.
of people who don't,
yeah.
a lot of us still really struggle with, like, how do we navigate through this at all? How do we talk about it? Most of our parents didn't talk to us about
right.
it. There's no, like,
class
literature about, I mean, there might be in, like, academia, but there's very
yeah.
little literature about, like, how do we now openly talk
right.
about these things.
And then when we start feeling these things, we have to navigate for ourselves of what is this? I think it might be anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
I think
right.
But I went through a path. So when I first started feeling fit, like the reason why I first started going to therapy wasn't even because I had unlocked the fact that I had so much anxiety, but
mm-hmm.
it was because I was like consistently stomach upset, bloated,
hmm.
like physical. This is what I mean by physical manifestation. And so I had to go through a whole route of, I went to a nutritionist. What am I allergic to? Am I celiac? Do I have IBS? Like, why does my chest feel so tight? Should I like get a breathing exam at the doctor?
Right.
To literally come all full circle and be like, I need to talk to someone. And it ended up being anxiety. And I remember you saying that to me at the beginning. And I was like, no, Sarah, I literally have certain foods that bother me. Like,
mm-hmm.
I have a sensitive stomach. And she was
right.
like, okay, like, I'll let you
yeah.
come to this on your own. And the fact that we have to do that kind of, like, circular motion to come to anxiety and pinpoint it is because no one gave us the tools to be like,
yeah. mm-hmm.
this is what this looks like.
Mm-hmm.
If you experience, it's the same
and
as
many
like,
doctors don't even suggest it. They're like,
yeah.
well, you should check out the gastro and, like, go to the
exactly.
allergist and the nose and throat doctor. And it's like, I did that. I don't know if you know, but I spent a whole summer trying to figure out what was wrong with me. And I went to so many doctors until finally I was like, why don't I just, instead of taking medication, switching my life, why don't I just talk about it to someone? And it helped. And it was like
yep.
such a concept that like if you just talk about what's going on, it could actually help.
And then you watch the physical stuff disappear
yeah.
when you work on your mental health. Like my therapist name is Debbie. She's amazing.
Holler at Debbie. Shout out to Debbie.
Follow Debbie at Debbie. Just kidding.
Oh my God, imagine she's like, please remove this.
She was like really ahead of the curve if she got at Debbie.
Right?
She had to pay for Debbie.
So we were talking about this the other day, Sass. Like, she calls it the work. She's like, the work that we do in here. And I'm just picturing, like, physical labor, like, shoveling, like, coal. But, like, it is. And
yeah.
it translates to all those physical things. She'll be like, so how is, like, your stomach feeling? And I'll be like, oh, I haven't thought about that in 3 months. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. It's fine, I guess. You know?
Yeah.
So
true.
Because the physical stuff I've experienced is very much, like, a side effect of the anxiety that's going on
yep.
in my brain.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, sometimes when you get to the root of it, the physical stuff disappears without you even noticing
yep.
it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm going to take this time to introduce the peak and pit of the week.
Oh yeah, definitely.
If you listened to last week's episode, you know that we're going to start doing a weekly peak and pit of the week. So who wants to kick it off?
Let's let Laura start.
Oh my God, I wasn't ready. All right, I'm going to think.
She wasn't ready.
I wasn't ready.
What is that?
It's like a vine. I don't know.
That's your generation.
Okay.
She's Gen Z or whatever that is
called. I am
called.
Actually.
So the peak of my week Should I start with
Peak of the Week?
Pit.
We love
Pit.
That. Pit. Oh, start with Pit. Always end on a good note. Seriously. But we love saying Peak of the Week. And by yeah. we love, I mean the one time
Got it. Last week. I actually am coming up with this on the fly. My mind is blank. The Pit of my week was probably just like work annoyances. So one of the things right now in life is I'm feeling kind of unfulfilled by work. Mm-hmm. I went into advertising, have been working on brands that like aren't super fun, creative, trying to be more creative person as I go into these years of my life where I'm trying to figure out who the hell I am. And so sometimes at work when you're just like doing the mundane tasks, as we all know, and this is very relatable and not super specific, but like that makes you feel like you're not offering something. Like there's this idea I feel like right now of like, what am I putting out into the world? What am I offering? What am I mm-hmm. adding? And like, More so likely than not, every day we're not specifically like adding incredible new things. So when at work I don't do that, I feel down on myself, which is a whole nother conversation. But peak of the week,
peak of the week
was probably
peak of the week. Yeah.
Peak of the week. So today I had a morning where I was so anxious. I literally woke up with a tight chest for no reason. All these things were bothering me. And I'm a big, like, imperfect conversation, imperfect little, like, this transaction, the way that my morning went, the train, this, that, can actually make me be like, like, I can't continue. That's going to sound really nice.
It sounds great. I like it.
And the subway. We talk about the subway a lot
all the time.
The subway is a place is really, yeah.
The subway is the
but the, peak,
the center of my anxiety. Yes,
was going into yoga and being like, I can only control myself. Mm-hmm. I will in this next hour come out of this feeling different. I'm going to choose to do it. It's a mental choice. And I came out of it feeling that way. And that was like a really strong place because I think at times, sometimes you're not in a place where you right. can control that.
You feel like you can't even choose.
Yeah, coming to that was really nice. So I feel better now. And here we are.
Namaste.
Namaste. Sarah?
Me?
Yeah.
So I know a lot of you heard last week about my fight with my friend. So part of the pit going into the week was the fact that that was still going on. But going right into the peak of the week was that we solved it. And then on top of that, I ended up going on a boat cruise, little boat New York City party this weekend. And it was really fun. And I was feeling so much better about the fight that I was able to like really enjoy the boat party. Mm-hmm. And this is going to sound silly, or maybe not, but I have wanted to see the Statue of Liberty up close for so long. I've lived in New York for so many years and I've never done it. And I didn't know the route that the boat was going to take, but we got like right up close.
That is cool.
And it was nighttime and the Statue of Liberty was just like shining, and I'm also French and we got the statue from the French.
I was gonna say, immigrant family, does that make you feel like more toward the Statue of Liberty?
Yeah, and also France gave us the Statue of Liberty. So like it was very like, I don't know, it was really cool. Like I sent videos to my mom and I was like, look, there she is. And you know, there was a DJ on the boat and everyone was like getting so into the house
like Skrillex,
and I'm like
background.
Pushing through the people.
You're like, I need to capture this historic moment.
Yes, we were so close to it, and I like literally and I was pushing through the people to get to a good view, and it was honestly breathtaking. So that was definitely a peak for
nice
me.
Nice peak.
Cool.
Liz, tell us about your pit and peak.
My pit happened today. We're recording on a Sunday. This happens most weekends. I am in a long distance relationship and I have to say goodbye to my boyfriend, which like honestly never gets easier, and I cry every single time. It's just like very hard. And even though I know that like I'm going to see him soon and that I carry on during the week like totally normally, there's something about like it's an isolated moment where you feel so heightened that like you have to cry even if you're not like sad and you know it's going to be okay, you know? Yeah. Like those moments where it's like, I'm not even sad, but like this is just, it's a little,
it's happening.
It's like a
happening.
Vacuum where you have to cry because it's just like a bunch of emotion building up.
Shout out to Chris. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Chris. So, and then the peak, it is, wow, there's honestly a lot to choose from. So I'm very grateful for the week that I've had.
Good for you.
I went to two concerts, but the peak has to be that I saw my hero, Kim Kardashian.
How did it take me this long to talk about
it? Going into Saks Fifth Avenue. And I want to say something very important because as I was thinking about
it, she looks back at you.
She did.
She looked back at her.
That is the peak. But I want to talk about like very quickly why this is like more than just a surface level, like meeting a celebrity. I have a very challenging time in New York City because I sometimes feel like I'm not cut out for it. It gives me so much anxiety, which we already have talked about mm-hmm. on the podcast, and it's just a challenging place to live. And sometimes I'm like, why am I here? I should just move back home, etc. But this was a moment where I was like, oh, that's why I live here, because there's so few places in this world where you can just run from your job to like go mm-hmm. see a celebrity that you mm-hmm. really admire. And it was a moment where I felt like this sense of relief for the choices that I've made, and knowing that like this mm-hmm. city that I live in has so much to offer, as frustrating as it can yeah. be.
I love
so
that.
That was really yeah. cool for me.
That is really cool. I yeah. think a lot of times I also struggle because New York City can be a lot to handle. But then like once in a while you get those cool experiences that everyone in the world talks about. Like yeah. they're like, New York, it's so crazy. And I'm just like, I
what's
work,
so great
I went
about
home,
it,
I
right.
cooked. Like, I didn't cook, I ordered in.
What?
I got a bagel from downstairs.
I got a bagel yeah. from downstairs. Like,
bagel guy hit on you yet again.
Yet again. Yeah. Oh, God. When you face those, like, cool opportunities once in a while, and you feel this like adrenaline rush, you're like, I live in the coolest place
like,
ever.
Greatest city in the
yeah,
world.
Sometimes it happens just walking down the street. Like maybe nothing major even happened, but you pass like an outdoor bar and all these people are talking and you see a first date, and then to the left you keep walking and you meet up with your friends, one from high school, one from college, and it's mm-hmm. just like, wait, I'm dating New York City.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's seriously very
you know
Sex and the City
about,
reference.
But. Yes. You know what I love about New York, too, is that this is, like, so me, and if you know me, this won't come at a surprise, but, like, sometimes I'll randomly see girls crying in the street.
Oh, I see it all the time. You're like...
No, I always stop them. Like,
you do?
Talk about it? Yeah,
oh,
because...
Sarah.
That's nice.
I've seen so many girls in the street, like, on the phone with someone being like, and then he just, like, said this, and then they get off the phone, and they're like, okay, bye, and I'm like, listen to me. You will get through this.
You've yeah. done this?
Yeah, like,
that
multiple
really
times.
Cool.
And they're just like, okay, thank you, and I'm just yeah. like, go get it. I'm like, go get the day. And they're just like, thank you so much, and, like, I walk away, and I'm like, huh, well, my job here is done. Like,
that is New York in a nutshell.
It's so New York.
Yeah.
Like, you could see people dancing in the street, and you wouldn't be like, ooh, dancers.
You don't even
You'd be like, there's the dancers. Like,
right.
There they are.
You would see women like walking around without shirts on, and you're like, oh, another day in the big windy.
In the big titty.
Big titty.
In the big titty.
Wait, where is the big titty from?
Like the big city, the big
oh,
titty.
Oh, oh.
It's like you see women walking without a shirt on, and you're just like, oh,
literally,
there's
the big
titty.
There's
big titty.
Okay.
That's so funny. All right, let's get into today's topic.
Okay.
I think we definitely wanted to invite different people on to get varied perspectives of mental health. So I wanted to talk to Laura, and Sarah wanted to invite Laura on to talk about like your journey,
mm-hmm.
how you've sort of sorted through your own mental health, yep. and I'll just let you take the lead on
sure.
this.
Sure. So I guess I kind of touched on the beginning of it already. So I was having like all of these physical feelings that I've never experienced. I am really super grateful and lucky to be someone who just like wakes up and my happiness level is really high. Like I don't think I noticed it as a kid. I would pop out of bed and just be like... sunny out,
good
like
morning.
Pancakes, mom, dad, like really just blessed to have that mindset. Nothing was that amazing going on, but
right.
I just like live on kind of a high, so kind of just living on a high place of my happiness level. And I think graduating college, moving to New York, which is an interesting segue from our last conversation about how it can be amazing. I think that starting to live on my own and disattaching myself from, I'm a student, I'm in a sorority, I go to Syracuse, I'm my parents' daughter, like, now I'm just Laura, and I'm living in this apartment, and I'm kind of getting used to going to work, and I'm having all these feelings pop up, and why are these things coming up? I don't know, and I definitely didn't know it was anxiety, so like I said, I went around trying to figure out what it was, and when I decided to talk to someone, it took my dad calling me on the phone one day and just being like, Laura, like, this isn't you, you're always so happy, and when your father, I guess for me, like, my dad and I talk about a lot, but for him to call me and be like, this isn't you, I want you to go talk to someone, which I've never heard him discuss mental health or therapy, I was like, okay. So I started to go to therapy, I found Deb, and again, like I just didn't have this identity anymore of where I could place myself, where I fit in the world, and I think it really threw me for a loop. So I've always dealt with stress in my life, so my
right.
mom has a chronic fatal illness, my mom has ALS, and that's something that I've dealt with since I was like 12. So to be completely honest, when I was older in my life, like it's not even something I think about as
yeah.
this huge problem, because imagine being 12, I didn't even have my period yet. Like I wasn't a full version of myself. I've been dealing with this in the same way that you would be dealing with, I don't know, anything from your childhood, it becomes the norm. Right. So I never considered it to be something that was affecting my mental health because I felt so well adjusted. I was like, mm-hmm. this is my life. My mom's lucky enough to be alive 16 years later from when she was diagnosed, which is absolutely unheard of. So if anything, my family was always focused on like the positives of that. And like, she's still here. We're still doing amazing. We're still having barbecues and jumping in the pool and having dinner in the back. Like, life is pretty good, as you can attest to from being at mm-hmm. my house like many times. But I think that getting older and just kind of like sitting, like there was no distractions from school. There were no distractions from like, you know, going out constantly in college and just kind of sitting with who you are. Like, I think that's really hard. Mm-hmm, is just sitting with who am I? Like, what are these experiences I'm going through? How has my past started to shape me?
Yeah.
So
you no longer have these identity.
Yeah.
And we've spoken about this before, is like, I feel like we always grow up where people are like, you have to find yourself. Right. Who are you? Who do you identify as? What do you identify? It's like, oh my God, stop. Like, yeah. I don't, it's really hard when you're going into your 20s and you feel like you suddenly have to like find yourself, air quotes. And it can be really confusing when you don't really, you're not really able to like label yourself as something other than just like Laura.
Right. So you open yourself up to feeling a lot of emotions that might have been repressed.
So when you're searching for something, those repressed feelings are coming up. Exactly. Yeah. So I started going to therapy, and I think that like just as a person, Sass can speak to this a little better, but like I think I'm just essentially really open. Like I've never not spoken about something. So going in, as much as that might not be relatable for a lot of people listening, it wasn't that hard for me to just lay myself out on the table, but what was hard for me as I continued to go was to hear that like so much of what I thought was my surroundings was really me and the way that I internalize and analyze and perceive things. And I think that's what therapy is all about, because we can only control ourselves.
So can you speak a little bit more on that? What do you mean by your surroundings versus like yourself?
So I think what I'm learning is that I'm really, really receptive and analytical to the point of like fault. Like I will find a problem in any situation of just that vibe didn't feel right. I don't like the way that she just answered that. Is she like pissed about something? Did I do something to bother her? Or like, what is this energy that I'm feeling right now? Mm-hmm. And a lot of the times those things aren't existent. It's just in your mind.
Yeah.
And I started to deal with how to kind of get through those moments. I was really annoyed and aggravated easily. Like my friends know me as someone who would always be like, oh my God, like throw my hands in the air and slap my thigh over something like nothing. And it was actually really funny. Like sometimes it's mm-hmm. funny and like entertaining. Yeah. Like I talk a lot of shit, I think, just because it's an easy way to take an emotion and then funnel it through. And what am I comfortable with right now? So like, okay, I'm really anxious today and I don't want to think about that or talk about that. So I'm just getting really annoyed at people stepping on me in the subway.
Can you like elaborate a little bit more on what you mean by like the funnel? Yeah. That's a really good idea.
Okay. So when I first started talking about how I was angry in therapy, I was like, I'm just really annoyed by people. Let's say like my roommate doesn't wash her dishes in the sink. Like I'm really annoyed. If someone bumps me on the subway and like they're not thinking about my personal space, I'm like, is something that's interesting? What's wrong with you? Like mm-hmm. you should take a look at yourself. And then I was having all these thoughts that are just super unkind and like not how I want to be as a person. I was speaking to that in therapy. And Deb was like, okay, so think about your emotions as a funnel. So the top of the funnel, the wide part, is your anxiety. And that's something that no one is pretty comfortable dealing with all the time, as much like we repress a lot of that. So think of the funnel going all the way down to the bottom. That tiny little hole coming out is what you're comfortable, an emotion that you're comfortable releasing. Emoting and releasing. Mm-hmm. And in those moments, it was anger or resentment. Or like, I would love in our group of friends to always be the devil's advocate, even if I didn't agree with the devil's advocate position, just to like get a little something, just to like stir the pot. Uh-huh. I love to stir the pot. And it was because I wanted to just release tension that was in my own self towards the rest of the world. And I think it was really interesting to learn through therapy, because it's like, again, that's an internalization. It's not about what's happening around you. This person isn't pissing you off that much. At least this is my experience. Your friend isn't bothering you that much. You're projecting what you're feeling inside onto other people. And that can be really hard just for life, because you're straining your relationships.
Right. I think it's important also that you were able to reflect on how you were as a kid, how you grew up, and knowing that you felt
this
very positively.
Totally.
And identifying like, wait, I'm very angry, and knowing like the first step you took was, I don't have to be this way.
Right.
So that's something that you kind of work through in therapy and were able to identify like where that was coming from.
Totally.
So it's good.
I mean, I think the other biggest thing, I don't know if the first part even is valid, but this part is, I think that one of the things that I have learned that I do a lot is just be kind of a control freak. And I think control, just in this time of finding our identities and trying to figure out who we are and trying to over control how we act, how we're perceived, how we think of ourselves, because self-dialogue is such a huge part of this. I work really hard, even though I don't think it's a good thing, to control every aspect of that. So it's like little perfect moments. Like, did I perfectly go work out and then come home and shower and have the exact thing that I wanted to eat and have that perfect conversation with my roommate, and my boyfriend and I are in an amazing place and I sent him this like exact, you know, text that was, it all comes back to perfectionism.
Yeah.
Like, and I think that control for my life with my mom being sick, that's something that I'll never be able to control. I've never been able to control it, and I can't. And that's really, really hard for me. So I have learned through therapy that I am constantly trying to control interactions, moments, how I look, what I'm eating, what I'm saying, what I'm doing, how I'm perceived on Instagram, how I'm perceived by my friends. I've even said to you guys recently, like, I am sharing too much with you. Like, I'm almost nervous that I'm sharing too much and looking for validation with you guys versus having it with myself, because I'm trying to control how even the closest people in my life see me.
Yeah.
So I think that, like, I don't know if you guys have experiences with that, but I think that that's, like, a huge part of this kind of time in our lives.
I think that everyone can probably attest to a thing in their life that they can't control, even if they can't identify it. And the way that it manifests itself can be productive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know that I can control the things going on in my home, but I'm a good student and I can, like, work through this math problem to make sure that, you know, I get these grades. Like, you can use this, you know, this sort of feeling of uneasiness to get to somewhere good.
Right.
Or it can be really bad. I talked a little bit last week about my own issues with eating, and like there were a lot of things in my life going on, whether they were perceived in my environment or whether they were chemical, that made me feel like I didn't have control, that made me lean toward, okay, how can I control what I eat and what I look like? Which I think, I think that that's like what anxiety is for everyone, and this feeling of uneasiness, not knowing what to target, can make us feel like very lost. Sarah, do you want to talk about, have you experienced a sense of like lack of control and how you tried to manage that?
Yeah, it's actually interesting because I'm just, and I'm quiet right now because I'm just really interested in hearing these different perspectives, just because I have never personally gone through feeling the need to control like what I do, what I eat, like that. My anxieties haven't come out in that way. It's more so like my anxieties are so focused on losing people, and I have such a fear of losing people that my control comes out in the sense where I feel like I always need to be good, like on good terms with everyone in my life, because I'm so worried about losing people.
Yeah,
that
based
is
on
actually
my experience.
Such a sense of control too. Like checking on your relationships. It's like
that's
a check on the list.
Exactly. Like I used to literally be like, oh, I haven't spoken to that person in a while. Mm-hmm. They're probably mad at me. I have to text them right now. Like my control hasn't come out in like physical ways, but it's more so like I need to always make sure my relationships with people are good, in a good place, because my anxieties are really centered around like losing people. So I think that I've always kind of just like been super hyper aware of like where my relationships are at, and like, are people happy with me? Are people, and like, if they're unhappy about something in their own lives, then I used to like be like, it's my responsibility to fix it, because then at least I can make sure that my relationship with them is always going to be good and they're going to really count on me and like look at me as the girl that helped them through it, and that means they'll always love me and always be there for me. And it's kind of selfish when I say it out loud. Like I used to be like, I am the most selfless person.
Anxiety,
you know,
is selfish because you're forced, because you're hyper aware of whatever this trigger is for you. So it is self-centered, I guess, in a way.
I do get a lot of fulfillment from helping people. That's just like something that brings me joy. But on the other hand, a lot of that has come from such a fear of losing people in my life that I just always used to be so obsessed with making sure that like no one was mad at me. So that's like mm-hmm. controlling my relationships was something I really cared about. But just to jump back quickly to what Laura was saying earlier, like I have seen, it's cool to for me to hear you speak about all of this because I have seen it firsthand. And I think when I first met Laura, like it's true, we did used to make jokes like, it was like judging people, but it wasn't even about people specifically. You weren't sitting there being like, I hate that person. You didn't even right. know these people.
Right.
It was just like a underlying like anger that would just like come
tension.
Out. Tension.
Yeah.
That, yeah. And, you know, it was funny. We laughed about it for a while, but I've really, really seen Laura go from this person that her anxiety or whatever it might be comes out in anger to now you're like, when you say like yeah. one of the kindest people
so
ever.
I
you're like too sweet for me sometimes. I'm not joking.
Who are you talking to?
You've become a very gentle person, at least with me. You're like very gentle with me and always like, you know, reassuring me that I shouldn't be too hard on myself for things. Mm-hmm. So it's really crazy how we can be feeling one way about ourselves. Mm-hmm. And then when you see it in your friend, you're like, hey, don't be too hard on yourself. Or like, hey, like, don't you need to control everything. It's just funny to how like we learn from our own experiences. And then when we see it without being emotionally involved in our friends, we can help them and be like, I've been through this and I see what's going on. And, you know, don't be too hard on yourself because you're just doing your best.
So. I actually think that, well, when I first met you, Laura, I noticed immediately how, like, perceptive you were and, like, you were always listening to the things that I say, which I think is very rare in groups of people our age. And I actually think it's really important that you touched on anxiety being self-centered because I think that when you're going to therapy, you have to be self-centered mm-hmm. because you have mm-hmm. to work on yourself. And the fact that you are able to listen to other people and have those dynamic relationships with people you're just meeting, like me, people you live with, mm-hmm. like Sarah and your other roommates, is such a testament to your ability to work on yourself. Like, you wouldn't be able to carry on in those relationships productively if you didn't have those moments of introspection, mm-hmm. dealing with your own okay. shit to make sure that you going forward are happy and that you can be a positive person in other people's right. lives. So I yeah. think anxiety is self-centered, but yeah. in some ways working on anxiety yeah. should be self-centered so that you can then yeah. like help fill up other people's buckets.
It's really funny because when I first started going to therapy, I used to apologize like every 3 seconds. Like if yes. I cried, yeah. I would apologize.
I forgot about that era, Sass. You were apologizing all the time. We were like, it's okay. You yeah. literally stepped to the left of my foot.
Yeah. Like, yeah. yeah. Like I used to go to therapy. The first week I went to therapy, guys, I would sit down and I would start crying. And I would be like, I am so sorry for crying right now. And she was like, what? Like, you literally pay me to yeah. sit here and listen yeah. to you. And I was like, I'm sorry for crying. I'm sorry. I was like, why am I talking about this? How are you? Like, she was like, what?
She's like, this is my job. This is my yeah. job. Yeah.
It really has taken me a lot to feel not guilty about talking about myself, mm-hmm. wanting to focus on myself, like, putting myself first. Like, I still, to this day, really struggle with, like prioritizing my own happiness. And
you're getting a lot better at that.
I really do feel like I've worked on it. And it is work. Like I've worked on it so hard in therapy, but like
the live long day.
Yeah. Like literally like it truly is the work we put in, but I've worked really, really hard to not apologize so much for just like being. And like when people used to say like, do you want to go out? I couldn't say no because I was so scared of like upsetting someone else or that someone would be mad at me or think I was like a bad person. Mm-hmm. So like I would be like on my deathbed and I would be like, well, I guess I'm going out, you know? and so it really does, it does take a lot to not feel guilty about speaking about yourself and like wanting yeah. to better yourself. And in fact, helping yourself ends up being better for the world around you mm-hmm. because for each of us, like the more I felt like I was prioritizing my happiness and like being okay with who I was, the better, the more comfortable I felt actually listening to my friends mm-hmm. for them, not for me. Like
it's all about the energy that you're putting out, I think. We're living with, there's 4 women in our apartment.
Yeah.
We each have our own shit going on, our mm-hmm. own stuff going on. And like the energy that you're putting out, when you walk in the door and you're super anxious, it's affecting 3 people. And that's not something that you should feel guilty about. I feel uh-huh. the same way. I know sometimes I'm putting energy out into a space that I'm in based on how I'm feeling. Uh-huh. But when you're selfish enough to remove yourself And I think that's really hard to do. And I want to talk about like validation in a second, self-validation with doing that. But like when you're able to remove yourself and work on whatever that is. So if you need a night to yourself in your bed where you're going to say, no, I'm not watching a movie with you guys right now. And I'm going to go sit by myself, or I'm leaving the house, or I'm going to be quiet, or I'm going to be in a certain mood. Like, you owe it to yourself to deal with it however you want to. And that helps the room so that you're not forcing something like fake, because people can tell.
Yeah, because I used to, like, when I was going through my breakups, like, in the past, you know, I used to feel really guilty for talking about it or for crying about it or, like, taking up too much time talking about me. And so then I would kind of just be like, whatever, like, let's not talk about this. Let's talk about something else. But like, then I would spend the next 2 hours in my own head.
Right.
Because you're I wasn't able to get it out.
Right. And so you're then, not able to then help your friends with anything. Exactly. So it's like, what's the point of me sitting here just to feel like I can sit here and I'm not talking about my breakup when I'm not being like a productive member of this group anyway.
And like, it's funny because as we talk about this, like, I feel so guilty saying these things out loud right now. Like, I'm feeling very conflicted because I'm like, God, why am I so selfish? Like, it sounds like I just,
but
like,
if you're not going to be selfish for you, who is?
Who is?
It's weird, though, when I talk about my anxieties, because it just makes me feel, like, guilty, you know? I just feel very guilty.
You feel like you're taking up space by talking about yourself.
Yeah, I feel weird. That. I'm like, well, why would anyone want to take on my anxiety? Like, or why does... I don't know. I don't know what it is. I just feel, like, really self-centered. And my therapist was telling me last week, she was like, you have already made so much progress in here, but it really is super common to feel selfish. Like, you're feeling self-centered when you start prioritizing yourself. Because when you spend so much time worrying about everyone around you, and like, you know, for me, part of the control was making sure my relationships with everyone was really good. So like, when I started being like, well, what do I want to do tonight? I was like, I would feel terrible. And I still do. I still struggle with like, putting myself first, because in the long run, that's going to be more beneficial to my relationships with other people. But in the moment, I'm like, I'm hurting someone, I'm upsetting someone. And it's just like, it's just a struggle for me.
It's hard.
And I haven't figured it out, which is why I'm talking about it on this podcast.
Right.
Because I have not figured it out yet, but I'm trying.
I also think we're at a time in our lives where like, there comes a point where I think people become more independent and more selfish. Like, we have friends who started to like kind of distance themselves from us and get closer with their boyfriends.
Mm-hmm.
And we were like, what is this? This is not okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, looking back, like, we weren't there yet. In that moment, that's what that person needed to do for their own life. And I think that like, as I'm getting older, I'm starting to become better at being independent. I'm an only child. So like, most of my life was like, please hang out with me, I'm begging you. And that's how I became a social person, because I was like, I need to adapt to find ways to get people to like me and be a chameleon and be like, I have all these friends, because I was alone at home. Well, I was with my parents, but like, as a kid, you know, you want
a buddy.
Exactly. And so now, like, I feel guilty in this apartment being like, I want to be by myself, because sometimes I'll literally text the group and be like, please tell me no one's home tonight. I just want to cook dinner and sit in front of the couch by myself. And I'm like, okay, that's selfish. But no, like, these are the moments that you get to internalize, go through your thoughts, like, be in your own self-dialogue in your mind. And sometimes it's really hard to, like, wind down and have those moments if you do struggle with anxiety, or even if you don't, when there's so many other energies, so many other dynamics, people projecting their own anxieties onto you. Since we're going in the realm of selfishness, we keep bringing up this word. So something that happened a few months ago, the drop-off. My like 3-week drop off from you guys. So I
was like, what are you talking about?
I was like going through something with my boyfriend that I was over explaining, over telling all of my roommates, because I needed their validation on like the decisions I was making, the way I was approaching things, which I think we all do, which again is just four people being best friends and knowing each other for years. We all do this.
Totally.
I was making a choice, and I was kind of going against what my roommates had been telling me maybe was their thought process, or at least going about it a different angle or a different way that they would have wanted me to post our conversations. And so once I did that and I saw that some people weren't understanding of the choice that I made, I backed off for like a few weeks. And it wasn't because I was mad or angry. Maybe I was a little resentful and for a second, but it was more along the lines of like, wow, I'm really starting to notice that I am getting my validation from the people around me, from their reactions. I think we can all attest to this with social media, which is a whole nother conversation, but just even the way that people react to what you're choosing to do. And that's the time that it took me to like just sit with my own energy about the choice that I made. Mm-hmm. And it felt like a really selfish thing to do. Like, I wasn't hanging out with everyone all the time. I wasn't telling everyone my every thought, which was a really healing thing for me, because I think sometimes with anxiety, you're trying to always overtell or overexplain or make sure, check in on, is this right? The way that I'm controlling myself all the time, I'm so hyper aware of the choices I'm making, what I'm doing, like that also goes into, I want other people to feel that like sense of perfection, that check off the list about what I'm doing too. I think that being able to pull back in those moments and be selfish and be like, I'm going to exit for a few days, I'm going to exit for a minute. And it doesn't have to be about exiting. It's whatever it is for you that helps your mental health in that moment. I think the selfish thing is the right thing, as long as you're not hurting someone in the process. Like, we have to be okay with sitting with our own selves. Yeah. And like putting that first, because everyone else is doing that for themselves.
I agree. I think it's just important that when you are in a space in your life, when you're available, that you're kind of, you're helping your friends. And it's not, again, that in and of itself, it's selfish. Oh, I'm gonna do this now so that when I need my friend, she's going to come back and help me. But no, it's like, you need to make sure that when you're emotionally available for other people, that you're being a good friend, because there's going to come a time when you might not be able to be that for that friend. Being able to kind of put work into your relationships will allow them to help you as they're supposed to later. So the fact that you had these like such great foundations with your roommates and with your friends really made it so that when you had this selfish moment, you didn't have to necessarily worry so much about, you know, what the perception was. Or you did, and then you realize later, wow, like they are my friends and they know me and they care about me. So having that selfish moment didn't impact like the status of our friendship.
And I think sometimes when, if you can feel a friend being distant because they're trying to take care of themselves, like I definitely noticed something was different. I was like, what's going on? You know? But even when Laura explained to me, like I just needed a couple weeks to like really be okay with my own decisions and not seek validation from others. And like, kind of like the second she said that to me, I was like, I get it. Like you needed time to not feel, not necessarily that anyone was judging you, but you didn't even want to play with the fact that someone might judge you for something. You just wanted to think about your decisions from your own life, your own perspective. Yeah. So once she said that, I was like, I get it. That makes complete sense.
I think it's great to talk about why putting yourself first will actually help your relationships with other people. If you are not working on yourself and working on your ability to process challenging situations, then you can't necessarily be as much of a help, or, you know, you can't be an active member of a relationship. So a good example that I have is a couple weeks ago, I was in Philadelphia, and I've touched on how I'm in a long distance relationship. So when I'm there, I'm visiting my boyfriend, and my mom and sister also live there. So I will often visit them too. And I was having a weekend where I came in on a Saturday morning, and I was just a little bit stressed about trying to fit in all of these things. And my mom called me and was like, you know, I want to hang out with you. I want to see you. And I feel like you're not like really wanting to see me and your sister. And she felt very upset by that. And I was kind of going through a hard time, because this is a period when I felt very down on New York, and I was kind of wondering, do I move home and all these things. So while I was in Philly, I was just feeling so overwhelmed by all these feelings that I didn't know that I could be available to my mom and my sister like in the way that I should be. And I was actually sitting in the nail salon when my mom called me, and like I started to cry, because she was just saying, like, I can't help you if you don't talk to me about, like, what's going on. You know, if you're not coming to see me and telling me, then, like, I can't help you through this challenging time. And I started to cry. And, like, my lovely nail technician took a tissue and, like, was wiping my face for me because my nails were drying. But it was hard, because I was telling my mom, it was the first time I really stood up for myself and said, Mom, this isn't about me not wanting to see you. I am having a really hard time, and so it's hard for me to be available to you and like hang out with you if I'm not feeling super up for it. And that was like really, really scary, because it's easier to say to someone, I don't know, like I just don't have time, than it is to be like, I am not like emotionally capable of dealing with like another interpersonal relationship right now.
I have the physical time. I don't have the emotional space for this.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was really hard. And she did make an excellent point. If you're not sharing some of the burdens that you're going through, it's hard for other people to help you through this challenging time. Mm-hmm. So I had to kind of learn, how do I navigate this moment of, you know, selfishness in air quotes? Like, how do I put myself first while also being like a good daughter, a good person? You know what I mean? So
It's huge.
Yeah. It's just, it's not black and white, because in the moment my mom was like, well, you need to open yourself up a little bit so that I can help you. Mm-hmm. But also I was like, I don't know how to do this.
I think that we know, if you're working to be more in touch with your emotions, you know that feeling of, I need myself right now. And you know that feeling of, I need ears and I need like a shoulder right now. Yeah. And I think that like trusting that in yourself, taking your own needs as priority, whatever that may be, is kind of just follow your gut with that. I mean, it's hard to say. Like, we are raised to believe that, you know, it's always about others. It's treat others how you want to be treated.
Right.
And it's like, you know, go out of your way, be a good neighbor, give a helping hand. Like, these are things that are said in religion. They're said in school.
Totally.
They're said in everywhere. And it's never, I've never really heard like an expression that has to do with how you treat yourself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Sarah and I like started really hearing about that in yoga, like self-dialogue, self-talk. How are you going to talk to yourself when things get hard? Like, that is huge, because we talk to each other with such care and such understanding. And then when it comes to yourself, it's
your harshest worst. Critic. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think flipping that and like making selfish a positive in some ways, and I think we all know what we mean by that. It's not like ever to harm someone else or to not care, but it's about, I need to prioritize myself, for my relationships, for other people.
Yeah. So that I can have a better life. I can be happy, or I can get joy out of things, but also so that ultimately I can be that helping hand, that good neighbor to other people.
I can put energy out there that's better for other people in my life.
A lot of times we feel, or I've felt, like I shouldn't speak about my issues or what I'm going through with other people, because I'm so nervous about taking up other people's time, or like I don't want my emotions to rub off on other people and make them upset, because I put my, I felt like a burden a lot. Like, I felt like if I talked about my issues, then I was burdening other people. I'm like nervous that when I tell someone something, even if it's like the slightest thing that happened to me, I'm going to put them in a bad mood, and like they're then going to be unhappy or annoyed. And I don't ever want to be the cause of like someone's bad mood. But I realized that expressing how you're feeling to someone else, even though it might feel selfish, quote unquote,
or a little uncomfortable,
it helps the relationship with someone else. It helps other people maybe with their own struggles. And just overall, like, it helps people understand one another. And it also helps you get through it. And I think it's really important. Like, I think with my parents too, sometimes they'll ask me what's going on, and I get nervous. I don't want to talk to them, because I feel a lot of guilt with my parents, because they've done so much for me that
that's,
I'm like,
the hardest,
well, if I tell them something, like, recently I was telling my dad how there have been times where I've like felt very alone, and like my parents were immediately really, really upset because they were like, we did everything for you. Like, we constantly tell you how much we love you. How do you feel alone? We raised you in this house. We put food on the table. Like, how do you feel alone? You know? And so sometimes I don't want to burden them in that way, but you know, in turn, telling them, being honest with them about how I feel, as hard as it may be, has helped them understand me better, and it makes our conversations more productive. And then when they feel a certain way, like how Liz, your mom felt, how she was like, why aren't you seeing me? Then when you can say, well, I'm feeling this way and I'm feeling this pressure and et cetera, et cetera, then you can start to have a conversation about like, okay, well, now I understand what you're going through and you understand what I'm going through. Like, how do we progress from here now that we understand each other a bit better? But when we try and go through things on our own, in our own minds, it ends up, you know, not helping
anyone.
Being open and honest with someone about how you're feeling you might be able to help them more in what they're going through.
Agreed. And I think to clarify, because there's like dual messages here, it's like, you're being selfish. Selfish doesn't mean you're removing yourself, like my story was. It doesn't mean that you're sharing with everyone, like your story was. It's whatever you feel the need to do for yourself, whether that be retract or go forward with someone else, whatever that feeling is. My mom was listening to an interview with Seal and Heidi Klum. They said something about, we really feel like in the world right now, all of the attention is based on the child, and the love between like husband and wife ends up going so much more towards the child. And we try and really make our relationship a little bit special with each other and put each other like 1 centimeter first, just in like in an energy and like how we devote our love.
It's us against the world.
Yes. Yeah. It's us against the world. And I really loved that, but none of the three of us right now are married or in a place where we're in that spot. So to take that down.
Or even close for me.
Right.
Sorry.
To take that down to a personal level that's relatable to us in our lives right now, it's like, can you have that one extra inch, that one special relationship with yourself before you start thinking about someone else? It's like, I will always be in my skin. I will always be me. Can I make that a really special place to be that I enjoy being, that I'm always going to give myself that extra hour in bed and not rush to the plans and just continue to talk to myself kindly and give myself what I need?
Well, it's that metaphor that I'm now remembering about the oxygen masks. Do you know this? Mm-hmm. What you're talking about with Seal and Heidi Klum, like how they have to put their relationship first, not just for their own betterment, but because they can be better parents to their child. So when you're on a plane, they always tell you if something is happening on the airplane and you need to get oxygen masks, you as a parent are supposed to take your own oxygen mask and put it on your face before you do it for your child, because you cannot physically help your child if you are not able to breathe.
Yeah, right.
So it's just an interesting concept that's hard for us to work through in our own brain, because it's like, well, if I'm working through myself, how am I ever going to help other people? Well, actually, you will be more of a help for other people when you focus on yourself.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that too.
That goes against so much of what we were trained to believe, and it even feels weird saying it out loud.
Yeah, it does.
Even in this moment, I feel weird about putting my oxygen mask on first, but I like, we have to continue to do it because we are with ourselves all day, every day for the rest of our lives. Yeah. And
you know, there's the quote that people find really cheesy, but it's like so accurate. And everyone says like, you have to love yourself before you can love others or be loved. And I always used to be like, ha, okay.
Yeah.
Like, that's not happening for me. But it really is so true that until you really feel, to use a yogi term again, but like grounded in your own, and that doesn't mean that you've got it all figured out.
No.
You most likely will never have it all figured out. Like, that's impossible. So take the pressure off yourself now, because that's probably not going
to
happen ever.
I don't want to have it all figured out.
Yeah, it's not.
That's not fun.
It's not what life's about. And like, you know, something that my pal Joe Jonas said to his, or friends, something that my friend Joe Jonas said to his fiance before they were married, Sophie Turner, was, he said, I'm seeing you love me more than you love yourself, and I can't be with you. We can't continue on if that's going to be the case, because if you don't love yourself, then you don't have the space to love other people. 100%. You can't fully be a supportive rock for someone else, which is ideally what you want to be in a relationship. It's not one half plus one half equals one. It's one plus one equals one. You know, that's what they say about relationships. It's not half of a person and half a person makes a whole. It's
two separate entities that are enjoying life
one another and going through the life inevitable struggles together, side by side, and being the support for one another. It's not that two people have to complete each other.
No.
And I think that for a long time, like I said in the last episode, I was like, well, once I find someone, that's when I will, you know, find my fulfillment and my happiness. But it's so true that if I'm looking for fulfillment in a relationship, I'm never going to be fulfilled, because that person is also going to be going through their own thing. So it's really important to be like okay, I am figuring myself out and I'm growing as a person, and I feel like I'm ready to grow with someone else because I've acknowledged what I need to grow on in myself, and like, I'm putting the effort in to learn on my own, not like I need someone else to come fix it, everything for me.
And even just enjoying your time by yourself, being like,
yeah,
I like doing this alone. And then when someone else comes in, it's like, this was fun to do with you, but I was also good on my own too. So even in current relationships, there's a way to go into your own self, find validation, love, happiness, a mood, a confidence from something that you're doing, whether that be just have a day to yourself, go be with your friends, go work out, whatever you like to do, and then bring that into the relationship versus I'm going to seek this from my significant other. I feel a certain type of way today. I don't feel good about myself. I'm going to go find this from him or her, and then I'll have it back in myself. That's never the way that it works well. You can try that,
but
you're going to fail.
Also, because the person you're in a relationship with is a person. They're not a robot. Like, they can't give you whatever you're needing in that moment. Like, that's why relationships are dynamic, and it's important to know what you're feeling in yourself, how you can can fulfill that within yourself, and so that when you're in a relationship with someone, you're not constantly seeking validation.
And to be like very raw for a second, but I think that's part of the reason why none of my relationships have worked out thus far, is because neither of us were in a place where we were ready to accept fully who we are mm-hmm. alone. And I think that's a big part of it.
And be selfish.
And I think a big part of it, it's like I said earlier, it's not that you figured it all out, but that's you've accepted who you are, and you're like, okay, this is me, and mm-hmm. like, this is what I need, this is what I want, and like, now I can grow with someone else. And I definitely wasn't in a place for that, and I think all the people I've tried to be in a relationship with hadn't accepted themselves, and they weren't ready to give me the support that I needed in a relationship. So now I've really spent the last year really trying to learn how to put myself first.
It's a lifelong thing,
for sure. But I think that like, once you start realizing it's okay to figure out what makes you happy.
Yeah. What brings you joy.
Then, right. Then you can be like, okay, now I can
be ready for other people. Mm-hmm. It seems counterintuitive, this idea that like, you actually have to be selfish or put yourself first in order to be an active member of a relationship. Like, you're constantly thinking, I need to be this for all these people. Yeah. But if you're trying to do that, then you're like half-assing all these relationships because you're not able to like fully commit to them, because you're not like fully committed to yourself.
So I think that what we're learning is selfish means a lot of things. Selfish can be locking yourself in your room because you just don't want to go with the plans that you said you would do, but that's okay. It means talking to someone and burdening them, even though it's not a burden, that's in air quotes, burdening them with something that's bothering you that may or may not affect the mood, the vibe, your friendship. It's
working in therapy.
Putting time to yourself. It's saying in your relationships or waiting for a relationship, I am still in a relationship with myself first. So I think that there are all these different ways to look at this word. It's not about putting anyone below you. It's about putting yourself even above the list that starts with number one. Like, you're zero. You're like negative two. Yep. Like, you're above. Yep. That sounded negative, but like, you know what I'm talking
about. No, totally.
You're zero, and all the other people are one, at a two, separate three. List. Yeah. You have to take care of yourself.
You're on your
first.
Own plane and your own level with yourself. And I think that that's something that
is
really hard to come to terms with. But when you do, and it's a lifelong struggle to do so, but it's only going to better yourself and others.
If you know that you're not being selfish in a malicious way, you're not doing it to hurt others, you're not doing it because whatever, you really believe that like, you deserve, you know, no, not you deserve, you do deserve the best, but like, you're not
doing
it.
Even struggling, even trying to say
it out
loud.
It's really hard to be like, what is being selfish? But it's like, it's not being selfish. It's we need to switch it, the term, from being selfish to, this is what I need to do in order to be there for others.
Yes.
And to be a better friend and family member, you do need to be, quote unquote, selfish.
Yeah.
And to have a happy life.
Like Kim Kardashian.
Yeah. To bring
it full circle.
Remember the Grey's Anatomy episode where they're like,
where they say,
he's not the sun, you're the sun.
Yes.
It's like about what
revolves around. Yeah.
It's like, your world is revolving around you. We all have that. We're all the sun in our little solar systems.
Right.
And if everyone else is doing it, you can do it too. It's okay.
Yeah.
We are each the sun in our own little solar systems, as corny as it sounds, but we have to remember that that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that, like, we are all in each other's orbit in some way, and that's how relationships work. But, like, you in your own universe have people revolving around you, and you revolve around other people, and like, that's just how the world goes around.
And no one else has some other planet as their center. They have themselves, so do it for yourself too.
Yeah,
I love that metaphor.
Okay,
Laura, thank you so much for being with us. We love hearing like what other people have to say, and because you have such a close relationship with Sarah, and we're starting to grow a close relationship, I'm like so excited that we've been able to talk to other people about this.
And it's really nice because I hear, you know, Laura and I talk about this stuff all the time, but it's rare that you're able to just spend a solid amount of time like talking through it. And, you know, just talking it out is really helpful, because this is another way that we're realizing that we're not alone.
Therapy.
And all of us are sitting here going through the same things, whether it's controlling one thing or another. Like, we're all in the same boat.
Yeah, we're all learning. It's the podcast of realizing things.
Right. And also, like, I think even just talking it out, you never have to feel guilty for putting yourself first, because we're all here supporting one another. And it's like, if that's what you need to find your happiness, then, like, I support you in what you're doing.
Yeah.
And I think it helps us all better understand each other and, like, what each of us needs. Yeah. So.
Thank you all for listening to the podcast. Make sure you follow us on Instagram at It's Fine I'm Fine Pod. You can find me at Liz Height, LizHeit, and
at Sarah L. Sassone. That's Sarah, Sarah, L for Louise, and Sasson. With that, it's fine, I'm fine. It's fine, I'm fine. Bye.